Lots to talk about tonight. Robert Knight with us, of course, photographer to the rock stars. Angela Thompson-Smith, remote viewer. We'll talk about the tie-in between the two of them when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Robert Knight back with us now. Angela Thompson-Smith, you just heard her. Robert, of course, has been photographing rock stars for 40 years, but has had a number of paranormal experiences here. Robert, I want you to set the stage here. We've got Angela with us, too. She's on the other line. Tell us about the situation with your friend and what really got you into looking for a remote viewer.
Well, my wife, Marianne Billum, who's also an incredible photographer, actually trained with Angela, and I was watching her results and was able to watch my wife's feedback working with Angela, and I saw astonishing things that she was doing. So I sort of had that in the back of my head in consciousness at the time, and a very dear friend of mine who I grew up with in Hawaii was living in the San Pedro area, and he went missing. And we became quite concerned. Several weeks went by. We called a bunch of people, and we couldn't locate him. And there were reports he was in Hawaii or Mexico. And he'd been turning, I think, 60. And we thought, well, maybe he was just depressed and went off. And, you know, a couple weeks went by. But eventually, my wife was nudging me, saying, you really should look into this. Call the police, missing persons or something. And then I thought, you know what? I'm doing this documentary. I didn't go swan. I'm around all of these people. I saw these spectacular things that, you know, my wife was doing with Angela. I know how to ask the question and how to do it in a way that it's blind and you're not hinting or giving any kind of clue to the remote viewer. I called Angela and said, I have a target. And she said, okay. And I gave her the target, which I had written in an envelope, which was the current location of Stephen B. Williams, sealed the envelope. I put an 8-digit arbitrary number to that. And all I gave Angela was that number. And Angela sent it out through her crew, which I think she can explain that process more.
Okay.
But within a period of time, she came back to me with the unfortunate news that my friend had been murdered.
Whoa.
That his body was floating off of Catalina Island. And he was killed by a friend over a money dispute, and you gave me quite a bit of detail.
Okay, let's bring you in on this here, Angela. Now, this is prior to the body being found, I guess. She was telling you these things, right?
Yeah. When Robert gave me the coordinate, I did a remote viewing and saw a body of water. I saw kelp. I saw it was brackish water. It was saline mixed with fresh. There was a lot of detail there. Gave that to Robert, and then he came back and said he needed some more information. And I farmed it out then to other remote viewers who came back with information about the body in the water and the friend. You know, we didn't know who this was. All we were seeing was the location of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And when the viewers said that it was near Santa Barbara, and we found it had the body had gone up round near Santa Barbara Island. So there was a lot of information that we passed on to Robert.
Okay, so Robert, when you had that information, one, did you believe it? And two, what did you do with it?
Well, here's the synchronicity. My wife and I happened to be in Los Angeles, and we were at a hotel. And just as the 11:30 or 11 o'clock news was signing off at 11:30, they mentioned that the sheriff department had found a body floating off Catalina Island, but it had decomposed to such an extent they had no idea who it was, what race it was, what nationality. And with the information that Angela had given us, I knew that was him. So at 7 in the morning, I called the coroner's office, and I said, you have the body that was floating out Catalina between Santa Barbara and Catalina? And they said, yes. I said, I know who it is. And they said, well, the body's so decomposed, how do you know? And I said, well, my friend lost the three tips of his fingers in shop class on his left hand. Go see if the skeletal remains was missing those digits. She came back 10 minutes later and said, what is your name? Someone wants to talk to you. So I knew there was a problem. And a few minutes later, that was the sheriff's department. And they wanted to know.
How did you know?
How I knew this information, you know, that he'd been shot in the head, that is, you know, done by this person and all of this information. And by, again, chance, I had worked on a book with John Alexander about non-lethal weapons, and I had met the commander for the L.A. Sheriff's Department, Sid Heal. And Sid was very up-to-date on all sorts of things that John had written about in his books about, you know, remote viewing and non-lethal weapons and all this kind of stuff. And I told the people on the phone, the sheriff, I said, listen, here's my phone number. Here's my Social Security number.
You weren't hiding from them at all.
No. And I said, in 30 minutes, your boss is going to call you. And I hung up. And I called John Alexander, hoping he was not somewhere on a mountain.
I know. You had to find him.
And I said, John, you got to do me a favor. I'm going to be arrested for murder. Can you call Sid Heal and have him call his guys? And he did. And he did call the sergeant, and they then called me back and said, okay, we don't know about the SciSpy business, but we were told you're not a suspect. Tell us what you know.
Oh, my gosh.
And I gave them a lot of information. I gave them a lot of background on the guy, and I knew from being around my friend who that was.
Did you have to tell them about Angela and her group?
Yes.
Okay.
I did. And the main thing for us was, you know, we were trying to help the police, who were not really grappling with this concept at first. But then when they started looking at the evidence, it fit.
How accurate, Robert, was Angela and her group with what you found on the body?
Well, I consider it pretty spot on because, yeah. You know, if Angela wouldn't have given me that information and I didn't happen to hear that newscast that my wife nudged me and said, listen to this. The body would have gone unclaimed, and no one would have probably put two and two together for a very long period of time.
Good point.
And I think this gave a real-time situation. The police were aware of it, and they were already on this guy, and he then disappeared. And I gave subsequent targeting data to Angela, who drew where he was hiding. And I recognized the map as being a place that I had photographed in my life in the Virgin Islands. And I told the police, this is where he is. And subsequently, they found that was the case.
Would you have been a prime suspect had you not had that relationship with John and the police officer?
Think, you know, they were going to go, how could I know all of this detail? Yes. They would have, you know, I mean, that was just uncalled for that somebody would do that.
Call
the coroner.
I've always asked psychics who go to police departments on their own and tell them this incredible story that comes out to be true.
Yes.
And they're always looked at as the first suspect. Always.
Yes.
It's amazing. So Angela, when you saw, by the way, did they ever catch the business associate?
They did. Okay. And it was a trial that was just finished. And one of my other dear friends, again, the synchronicity is unbelievable, who grew up with Stephen and I, he was able to testify and had a lot of damning information that was able to convict this guy. And my friend is a very heavy, high-level guy in the defense industry at Lockheed Corporation. So, he kind of knows my circle of friends with Hal and John and everybody as well. So it was really kind of a unique situation. But the police were able to convict the guy on real evidence, on real testimony, and the remote viewing kickstarted the case. So we didn't have to use or enter remote viewing information into the trial.
So your friend basically was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my gosh.
And he lost $2 million out of the deal and didn't realize it. And when he confronted the fellow, that was the outcome.
That was it. $2 million will do a lot to somebody like that, huh?
Yes.
Oh, man. Angela, so when you saw all this unfold, what did you think?
Well, at first it was just, just helping a friend.
Mm-hmm.
Robert had given me this tasking, and it was helping Robert, you know, find his friend. It became more of a quest, particularly when he asked about, where has this potential murderer gone, the suspect? And what I perceived was the shape of an island that looked like the southern counties, like Devon and Cornwall of England. And I found a graphic of that and sent it to Robert. And he sent back a map of Tortola Island saying, is this, you know? So then I did a little bit more viewing on that. So it was a feedback between Robert and I to get more information.
That is truly a remarkable story. I mean, what did the police think to this day, Angela or Robert, what do they think of all this?
They were really amazed. And the thing is that Angela came up with some other data, which was very interesting, that didn't come into the trial, that there may have been other people involved. And
right.
they have, I have to be very careful what I say here, but they were very intrigued by that. And it's quite interesting. I think that there's some serious believers in the L.A. Sheriff's Department now. And when Joe Shaneman, the guy who wrote the story in the Las Vegas Sun a couple of weeks ago about Angela, when he gave this to his editor demanded that, you know, this be proven. And he found, you know, the A-list Wikipedia denial of remote viewing that was the Air Report.
Yeah.
And I called Hal Putoff and I said, Hal, I'm having a problem here with a local paper. You know, what kind of a comment can you give me? And he said, well, basically, the Air Report was based on unclassified data. All the targets that Ingo had done back in the day are still classified. So, you know, the veracity of the ability of remote viewing was never really entered into the Air Report in truth. And he said, listen, there's two schools. There are people that have done remote viewing and experienced it and know it works. And then there's people who don't believe it, who are scientists or whoever, who have not experienced it and think it doesn't work. So we gave that to the editor, and then he demanded to talk to, you know, the sheriff's department. We found them. We tracked Sid Heal down, and all of this was confirmed. So the story that came out in the Las Vegas Sun absolutely went and confirmed that the police said, yes, Robert did give us this, Sid Heal did call, and, you know, with the help of John Alexander, I'm not in prison. So, yeah.
That is a dramatic story.
Yeah.
Angela, what other applications are there for remote viewing? I mean, have you done other police work like this?
The group did a case a few years ago of a missing Salt Lake City young girl. And in the beginning, we just got an urgent email saying missing girl need assistance from a colleague in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And gave that to actually to some advanced students. And we passed on that information, and it was pooled with other remote viewing information from other groups and given to the parents who, from the remote viewing data, knew where their daughter was, who she was with. We described the location, the people, that they were able to go and get her and take her home.
That is pretty dramatic work,
too. One of the success stories, yeah.
That is something. It is mind-blowing, isn't it, Robert?
Yes. I can't believe it. And you know, Ingo was, you know, in the background of this as well because he's, you know, I went to Ingo first. And you know, he doesn't remote view on demand anymore for anyone in particular like this. So he said, you know, you either got to call Paul Smith or Angela Thompson. And I had seen what Angela did with my wife. So I gave the target to Angela, and it worked out very quickly, though Paul is a very amazing remote viewer himself. So
how's Ingo feeling these days?
Well, I think he's feeling his age, and but we had a really good conversation a couple days ago, and I was able to tell him that we've got a group that looks like they're going to be involved in possibly a two-hour special on the Ingo Swann documentary.
Oh,
they're
that's
called
great.
Dominion. We're just talking to them now, early days, and he was very happy, and every time I talk to him, he gives me even more information about the program. Some little thing that I forgot to ask or something on the book Penetration, because I constantly come back to him on that book. And it's just, you know, a lot of what Ingo did years and years ago is only now being verified on the moons of Jupiter and some of these things he did back in the 70s. I mean, they're now saying there might be life on one of the moons, and he predicted that. When he beat the Voyager there.
Well, and we know what he said about the backside of the moon in his book Penetration.
Oh, yeah.
If that comes to be, what a story, I mean, that'll be.
Yeah, the veracity, I mean, everybody reads that book, which, you know, is extraordinary. A book that was $15 when it came out is gone for $600 and $700 now on the internet.
Yeah, no, you're right. You can't get it.
You can't get it, but all I can tell you is that, you know, I've talked to some very high-level people that I've met, and I said, well, you know, what about this book? And they said, well, first of all, Ingo wouldn't lie, okay? And we know this to be the case, sort of thing. So it's interesting.
It sure
but
is.
Other people think it's a work of fiction.
I talked to Russell Targ, and he and Ingo are inseparable. And Russell said, well, you know, Ingo is a good writer, too. He wouldn't say, yes, for sure, I know there's something on the other side of the moon. But,
yeah.
You know, I think there could be something to it.
You know, there was a period of time when he wrote that book to current days, but there was a period there where Ingo was commuting to Los Angeles on a regular basis to visit his mother. And we spent 3 days looking for this grocery store that he went into accidentally and saw some of the characters that he'd been up in Alaska when he saw the UFO. And he randomly picked this store, and he was trying to find it. And the irony was, it was next door to where I spend a lot of time, which is the Guitar Center in Hollywood. There's a Ralph's grocery store there.
Oh, yeah. They've closed that Ralph's, by the way.
Yeah, they did.
They're going to turn it into a superstore or something.
But we spent 3 days, you know, this was like 15 years after the fact. Still, he was like, you know, so devoted to this. So I don't believe it's a work of fiction.
Isn't there a picture of Billy Gibbons on the wall outside?
Yes, I think I took it.
Did you do that?
My wife and I do all the photos that are on the outside of all the Guitar Centers.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That beard of Billy's one of a kind, isn't it?
He's a unique individual. He just spent the day with my wife, Marianne, and I in Las Vegas, and we had a ball.
He's a good guy. Yeah. I went to the Beatles, what was it, Love, the Love concert, right?
Yes.
And I look over, and he's taking a nap. And I said, Billy, what are you doing? He went, I don't like the Beatles that much. That's him.
He is funny, and he is a reverend. You're right.
Yeah. So, Angela, let's get into some of the things you're doing with remote viewing. We're going to hit the break pretty soon, and I want to talk a little bit more about both your work, and then we'll take phone calls next hour. Are you going to be at the remote viewing conference that's coming up this weekend?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm giving a talk on the Denver DJ murder case that we've been talking about. Giving a presentation with a lot more information than we've been able to talk about on the show. And I'm also leading the spoon bending workshop.
Oh, is Uri Geller going to be there?
No, unfortunately, no. But it'll be a lot of fun.
What do you think of Geller's work?
I think he has a gift. He's a very gifted individual, but unfortunately perhaps being put on the spot and maybe reverted to a little bit of magic at times, and, of course, been discredited.
The Johnny Carson appearance got him.
Yeah, but I feel he has a real gift.
Yeah, he's
he was one of the original people that came into SRI along with Ingo and Pat Price, and he was looked at, and he showed remarkable skill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
He did a little start your watches and clocks, folks, when he was on our show. And people would bring their watches and clocks to the radio per his instructions. Clocks and watches that had never started. They stopped for years. He got them going again.
Yeah.
It's just, he's got this power.
He's amusing. I called him, you know, and talked to him several times. And he said, you know, people says, if you're so good at this, why aren't you rich? And he says, I am rich. Come to England, Robert, and photograph me with my Rolls Royce with all the bent screws attached to it. So,
yeah. He is. He was telling me his Edgar Mitchell story of the tie clasp, falling through the ceiling and things like that. Well, we're gonna take this break, both of you. Angela Thompson Smith, her website, by the way, is mindwiseconsulting.com. Robert Knight's Robert M. Knight, KNIGHT.com. When we come back in a moment, we're gonna talk a little bit more about Ingo Swann's work, what he saw on Jupiter and those moons. What did he really see on the far side of the moon? And then we'll also get into some of Angela's continuing work with remote viewing. And where does remote viewing go from here? We'll be back in a moment. Don't touch your dial. Hey, the Coast to Coast AM store is up and running. You can just go to our website and take a look at the incredible things. T-shirts there, and you'll like my mug, literally. And then a commander's hat, which I really like. So you've got some great things there. We're going to come back in a moment, continue talking with Angela Thompson Smith and Robert Knight. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with them right here on Coast to Coast AM. Angela, tell us about some of your work with the International Society for the Scientific Study of Consciousness. That's in Delaware, right?
Right. In fact, I was getting ready to tell you that. I went out in April to work with Dr. Melvin Morris, his group, and Melvin has got some ideas about melding remote viewing and healing work, because he was working with some of the early Dr. Isao Seki's work on Reiki, that you have to look inside the patient to look at the disease before you can heal it. So I went out and taught the group how to use stage four of CRV to get into a dialogue with the disease. It sounds very avant-garde, mm-hmm. you know, very controversial, but we found that we were able to get some very interesting information about the disease process of each patient that we were working with.
Now, tell me what your thoughts are truly about consciousness. What do you think it is?
Consciousness is the spirit of who we are. It's us. It's our life force. That is my personal feeling about consciousness. On the other hand, we are part of something greater. We're all connected. There's this entanglement idea that everything is connected, and I'm very much in tune with that.
You agree with that now, Robert, with your experiences?
Yeah, in my own personal life, I see the entanglement every day, and it's growing exponentially. And so I'm a firm believer, and then my meetings with Dr. Putoff and Jack Vallée have really reinforced that and what they're into and what they're studying at the moment.
Of course, so Jacques Vallée, he was highlighted in the movie The Extraterrestrial, let's see, Close Encounters.
Close Encounters.
The Third Kind.
He was François Truffaut character was based on him.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. That was a classic, wasn't it?
Yeah. He's also one of the key people in remote viewing. A lot of people don't know it, but he more or less came up with the idea of using a coordinate or an address when they were struggling at SRI, and Ingo and he met in the hallway and lunch or something, and he started talking about it, and he said, you need to have an address, Ingo, and that's where the coordinate concept came from. And so Mr. Vallée was very important. He was also trained by Ingo Swann and is a very good remote viewer.
Tell me what you think of Ingo.
Me personally?
Professionally, yeah.
First of all, he's one of the most extraordinary artists that I'd ever run across.
Really?
Dali was one of my favorite artists, and this was what Ingo was foremost. He was a New York artist, and he is an unbelievable painter. But he, like many things in his life, doesn't want to necessarily show it, sell it, or have anybody to see it.
It's just his, whatever.
It's extraordinary, and he one time took me up to see a thing up at the museum in Manhattan where they were talking about the farthest reaches of the universe and the Hubble photographs. And he showed me one. He nudged and he said, remember that. And then he went back to the loft and then he showed me a painting he had done in the early 70s of that nebula before the Hubble was even built. So his work is extraordinary. So, you know, he's a writer. He's, and it was through that circle that I think Cleve Baxter actually floated his name to some folks at the CIA, and they recruited him up over at Stanford. I think Cleve and Hal knew of him as sort of a New York eccentric artist who had some skill in the paranormal world, and that's how he got tapped.
What did he remote view on Jupiter?
Well, it was, you know, when they launched the Voyager, Hal and Ingo thought it would be an interesting thing to try to race the thing there.
Obviously, get there before.
It took a long time for the Voyager to get there.
That's
it took
right.
Ingo 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And sunlight takes 45 minutes to get there. So I know something that's moving faster than the speed of light. And various scientists told me actually Ingo was there instantly, but it took him 8 minutes to figure out he was there. And he, when we were doing the documentary, Ingo pulled out a 3-inch folder on the data he had on Jupiter, things that he saw. He saw a ring around Jupiter. He saw that one of the moons was far more interesting than actually the planet. He saw a solid, small core. He saw like a giant diamond, for lack of a better word. And when they gave this information to Carl Sagan, he laughed at it. He said, well, this falls into two categories. First of all, you know, we know there's no ring on Jupiter. And two, it's just so outrageous that it can't be true. 11 years later, Ingo gets a call from Caltech or somewhere and said, Ingo, by the way, congratulations. You're the first person to discover the ring around Jupiter.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah. And they kind of did it as a, you know, not, you know, it wasn't like a classified target. They just decided they would do it. And it was extraordinary. And I think that was maybe that work that might have triggered these sessions that ended up being moon targets, but at the time they were blind. He didn't know where they were, and he suddenly knew where they were and kind of got freaked out. So,
and are you done now with the documentary, or almost done?
What we've done is that it's interesting that the people that I've done this with, because Nick Cook is my partner, the guy that wrote for Hunt for Zero Point Energy.
Sure.
And John Stoller, who's the president of the IRVA. And the three of us, you know, kind of came up with this idea, and everybody knows Ingo turns everything down. And I said, let me give it a try. And Ingo said, if Nick Cook is involved, I'll do it.
Perfect.
So that was really interesting, because I think Ingo was a very big fan of the writing of Nick Cook. And you know, that's what precipitated it. And we've got about maybe 60, 70 hours in the can. And it needs to be edited for, you know, whatever purpose, whether it be a two-hour special or a one-hour show or a half-hour show. And we've talked to a series of people, but the people that seem to get it more than anybody are these people that we're talking to currently, and it looks like they're going to do a new edit for us. They're going to shoot some, you know, some reenactments and stuff that are extraordinary. So I think you can expect in the next 12 months to see this surface.
Is Ingo a believer, Robert, that this universe is teeming with intelligent life?
Yes, very much so, because some of them have been in contact with him. And Ingo is a firm believer in non-verifiable targets are garbage. And, you know, he right. is truly a scientist, and he doesn't like to do targets that you can't get proof that is really, you know, an actual answer. But he was getting some messages and things that he wasn't quite sure of, and that put him in contact with Dr. Michael Persinger up in Canada. And they did some brainwave studies, and they've actually created a database, and they can tell when Ingo is imagining, when he's remote viewing a distant target, a nearby target, when he's using his imagination. And then they map the correlates on his brain where this is happening through fMRI or whatever process Dr. Persinger's using. And they're able to stimulate that with this sort of helmet octopus thing that you can put on your head, and it enhances Ingo's ability, and it enhances other people's ability. So we've got quite a bit of footage of Michael Persinger going into great lengths about possibly a new stage of remote viewing where you might use some sort of feedback apparatus like this to possibly verify targets that are hard to verify.
Have they ever tested his brain and it went while he was in a remote viewing session?
Yes.
Does it spike?
Dr. Persinger described him as having, you know, an unbelievable order of magnitude different than other people. His brain is sort of wired differently, and he's a natural psychic. And what his ability was to work with scientists like Mr. Putoff and some others, and they would try to figure out how scientifically this was going on to create something that could be taught, because the area of the brain where remote viewing happens seems to be the same area of the brain where language skill is. And language skill is something you can learn, so that's how they kind of had the ability to train remote viewers, and the whole military team came out of that. Now, there are some natural people that say that you can't train remote viewing. I think Joe McMonagle believes it can't be trained, that you have to be a natural psychic. But I think Angela has proven, and others like Paul Smith,
Ed Dames,
you can be trained.
Sure.
And Ed Dames, yes.
There's no doubt. And Angela, let's bring you in for a second. Did the ancients practice remote viewing?
Well, of course, but it wasn't called remote viewing. That's a modern term that we've brought in. It was called clairvoyance. It was called distant seeing. Every culture, every era has had this skill way back. It's only been in modern times that we've been able to develop it.
I used to see old movies where a shaman or a medicine man would look up at an eagle, and all of a sudden you could see through the eyes of the eagle. Mm-hmm. Wherever it flew, you could see it. And to me, that was remote viewing.
Right. It's actually, merging with the animal, becoming almost shape-shifting into the animal and seeing what the animal sees. And that's possible in remote viewing. You can actually see through the eyes of a missing person and see where they are.
Give us a little synopsis on how you train people to remote view.
Excuse me. Can you repeat that?
Yeah. Tell us how you train people to remote view.
I have several different trainings. One is I take advantage of a person's natural ability, and I train them in something called extended remote viewing, where they just close their eyes. There's no pen and paper involved. And teach them to pick up information and to report it and remember it, what they're perceiving. Then there's, of course, the military method, which is a more sequential pen and paper staged process, which I teach in 5 days.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty...
I taught Robert's wife.
Yeah, Robert, do you do remote viewing?
No, I'm actually sort of stayed neutral while I was doing this documentary, though I think John Stoller is trying to convince me that I should ultimately train, but no.
You would think it would rub off on you by now.
You would. I think there's a natural thing I have as well, though, or I've been around enough sort of natural psychics that it sort of rubs off a little bit. I have really strong intuitions, and there's a lot of very strange things that happen around me. And John Alexander kind of opened the door for me and sponsored me to be a member of the AFIO, Association of Former Intelligence Officers.
Okay.
And I get to go to some briefings, but it was through that I met somebody at the CIA that worked there for 38 years, and he actually went on camera probably for the first time and talked about the program, and he connected me with George Little up there, and they provided me video footage, and they're very aware that I'm doing this. And one of the sidebars is that since the intelligence community has been aware of my documentary, Mr. Stoller and I have been contacted by active people asking for possible people that we could recommend that are really good. So I think there's still a renewed interest.
Well, you know, I would think that they should do the program again.
I suspect that it might be gone into black projects to some degree. We had some interesting meetings with some Navy SEAL people that were asking us questions. And one of Ingo's students that not many people know about, who's actually going to be at the conference this weekend, is Tom McNear. And he was one of Ingo's most extraordinary students. And his last day before he sort of graduated, Ingo made him do 20 targets, and he had to name them, which is really difficult in a lot of remote viewing situations, to literally name the target. And when I was filming with Ingo about 6-7 months ago, we actually had him doing a live remote viewing session, and Tom came and watched, and he was calling the target out before Ingo would give it to somebody. That's how good he is.
That's pretty dramatic. And Angela, you know, as you train people to remote view, what do they try to do? How do they use it in their day-to-day life?
Well, some of the better viewers, people that I can call on and rely on, I task them with various projects, and some will go off and they'll use it for writing a novel, or they'll go off and they'll use it in some healing work in their everyday life. Some people will use it in a real estate environment. So everybody has their own use for it.
That's pretty good stuff. It really is. And where do you take this next, Robert? I mean, you're going to do this documentary on Ingo, and, I hope it works well for you.
Well, I'm actually trying to get to television if I can find the right people that won't change where we're trying to go with it. A program where we kind of link that over to the rock stars and their sort of paramystical experiences, and not dumb it down for television, because I think I can get scientists and some intelligence officers and people to come forward on that show if we can do a very intelligent show. And my producer partner on that one is Shelley Madison, and she's tried very hard to keep the content focused on what we're trying to say. But so hopefully I think that's where I want to go. I'd like to bring this to television and maybe do it in a more of an ongoing thing where, you know, you have younger or newer remote viewers working with some of the older folks and in original core group, and look at targets that maybe you can actually verify and back in history and stuff, and just see how, you know, look at it from a different point of view.
Are you getting some interest from Hollywood?
We are, but again, they want to skew it younger because, you know, MTV was very interested in this, but then, you know, they sort of like, well, can you get a hold of Lady Gaga or Justin Bieber or, you know, some younger demographic for our core audience? And you know, that's tough because, one, these people are very famous and they're very active right now, and for them to do something like this may not be the best thing in their career. I don't know. You know, we've approached Katy Perry's manager because she's actually made some statements about aliens and things, but she's just way so busy. But we keep trying. But you know, my friends in Aerosmith, some of the, you know, Brad Whitford and Joe Perry, who are avid listeners, by the way, who are probably listening tonight.
Hi, guys.
Major experiences, especially Brad Whitford, just tremendous UFO experiences.
Have you done any work with John Fogerty at all? He listens.
Back in the day, back with Creedence Clearwater.
Yeah, exactly. Well, a couple more minutes to go here, then we're going to take a break and come back and take phone calls with both of you. First of all, Angela, take a few minutes. Tell us about the MindWise Consulting website and a couple of your books.
Right. I have four books, Remote Perceptions, which is about OBEs and remote viewing. And my last two books were a historical novel, River of Passion, and Shire, which is a little book about the area where I grew up in England. So about historical sites, etc. So I still continue to write.
Well, good. And the books are available?
Actually, they're out of print, but they are available on Amazon.
Okay. Well, good. Amazon has a lot. And Robert, yeah. Of course, your website's your professional website, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm kind of showcasing the younger artists. I'm spending a lot of time right now developing and finding the next generation of Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, and Stevie Ray.
And they're out there, aren't they?
They are, and I've created a little website called the Brotherhood of the Guitar, and there's 20 or 25 of the best unsigned young guitar players in the world up there right now.
What do you think of shows like American Idol?
You know, I watched it once when Aerosmith was on playing their song like 2 weeks ago, but Randy Jackson's a dear old friend of mine. I've known him from the Journey days, but it's a little too much pop culture for me.
Okay.
I'm not knocking it. It's the most watched show on television.
What is happening to the record business these days?
There is no record business anymore.
It's gone, isn't it?
No, it's the even now the merchandising business and the touring business. But, you know, traditional bands that used to sell millions of records now sell hundreds of thousands of records. And so
it's different platforms now.
Yeah, I mean, it's social networking and the internet and you know, digital that changed everything. And I think no one saw it coming, particularly the record companies. The only one that really has capitalized on it is Steve Jobs. And iTunes is going to own the future of music.
Well, they're going to do a great job. I mean, is it conceivable that someone will have a cut of music, put it on iTunes, and sell a few million of them?
It is happening. There's a band called Fun that I worked with recently that I think did a million sales on the internet only, direct to consumer. There's a guitar player I've worked with for 20 something years named Joe Bonamassa. He's only 35 right now. He has built the most beautiful model for the music business. It's direct to consumer. He four walls his own shows. He understands his core audience, and he's highly successful doing this. He doesn't really need a record company.
That's how does he find the people to buy? I guess through social
networks. Started working with, you know, school programs, you know, blues in the schools and things like that, and just slowly built it up. And he's got a rabid fan base of around 300 to 500,000 people globally that'll buy pretty much everything he comes.
Good for him.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Okay, stay with us. Robert Knight, Angela Thompson-Smith. And now it's your turn. We'll take your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.